Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results, made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional-grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
The Nikki Glaser Podcast. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Here's Nikki.
Hello, here I am. Welcome to the podcast. This is the Nikki Glaser Podcast. Fresh week of shows coming right at you on time. Recorded the week of the, so you know we've had to bank some the past couple weeks because I was in Australia and we had other stuff going on. But now they're fresh. They're up to date. Mm. You know, within a couple days. Let's be honest.
We you won't find this them in the discount bin.
What'd you say?
You won't find them in the discount bin.
Wait, what does that mean?
Because in the discount bin is all like the stuff, because we have someone stuff in the studio.
Yeah, the
this
old,
is new.
Oh yeah,
the
that's
squid.
A reference that's, to what Julie Glaser likes to eat.
That's Noah's catchphrase too. She's been saying that a lot.
I'm like, where have I missed this reference? But yes, she did say it like Julie Glaser, who is here, says it.
I know, she's
not gonna
speaking
find
for
those
me
in the discount bin.
And then we don't want them.
Yeah, we don't want it. Julie Glaser is here. Hi, Mom. Welcome
Hi,
to the show.
Hi, Nikki. Woo! Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're twinning today. We're wearing the same sweatshirt. She came in wearing a sweatshirt that I got us both for Christmas.
She had to hurry up and put hers on.
I put mine on, and as my mom was taking hers off, being like, "Ah, it is hot in here," and I go, "But I'm putting it on to look like
so
you."
So I'm hot right
and
now.
So now she's hot, and and Brian Frangie's here. I was with Brian all weekend. We were in Port Chester, New York, on Sunday night, and then
Brian
we were
was
in
with you
Ben Salem at Parks Casino on Saturday night.
Wow.
Yes. Good shows, great crowds, lots of besties.
You had a good crowd turnout on Sunday night?
Honestly, yeah.
Great.
Well done.
You were
to
nervous
Westchester
because of
County,
the,
New York.
The Oscars.
During the Oscars.
During literally during, as the, well, the Oscars started an hour before,
yeah,
so you could have maybe
earlier
watched
this time
the opening monologue and then zipped to the theater and seen it. But
Ryan Gosling went to the Oscars and then came to Nikki's show.
He was there.
Wow. Yeah.
That would have been.
Oh, I'm so glad he didn't make it to our show because
he had to hurry
I
up
have watched his performance of I'm Just Ken three
so
times.
Many, oh my God.
And I want to watch it 4 and 5 and 6, but I'm trying to like taper it because I want to maximize the joy that it gives me every time. So I'm trying not to overdo
zone
it.
What'd you like about it? What is it?
It was
so happy.
So good. Okay, first of all, this song, the movie itself was great, but Ken's arc I haven't even considered. Like there's so many times with a song that I'll just hear it and it's just a song and it's good and it sounds good and I like the way it sounds and it makes me feel a certain way, but I don't really like know why. And then I'm watching it, you know, at the Oscars, and I've watched it now 2 or 3 times, and I'm like, oh, this song's fucking amazing. This is a song about a guy who's overshadowed by Barbie, doesn't feel seen by Barbie, is in a relationship where he's not getting his needs met, and he doesn't feel like he has value. And so he inherently thinks he doesn't have value in anywhere. And because the whole world is built, his world that he lives in, Barbie Land, is built to make him feel marginalized. So he's this man with low self-esteem that's constantly acting like it's not a problem, right? Like, huh, I'm okay. Because I watched Barbie again last night, or I started watching it, and I kind of saw his struggle, which I already knew about, but I wasn't in tuned with it, of like, this guy is just putting up with constantly being told that his feelings don't matter. And that, oh, he's like, Barbie, you want to hang out tonight? And she's like, I'm having a sleepover with the girls, and we're going to have it forever, every night, for eternity. And he's just like, of course, why would I even want to stay? Okay, yeah. And then he like kind of slinks off dancing. So he has this like sad existence. And so the song is a realization of that. The song comes out of the moment where he realizes, like, what am I? I'm just Ken. Like, she's Barbie and I'm just Ken. And it's like, I'm just Ken. Anywhere else I'd be a 10. What'll it take for her to, you know, to, I'm just Ken. Where she sees love, where I see love, she sees a friend. Like, she's never, he's never going to get seen. And then the song shifts and it becomes, by the end of it, it turns out, to, it starts out the sad song of, I'm just Ken, anywhere else I'd be a 10. And then it goes to like, I'm just Ken, and so am I. Put that manly hand in mine. And it's like, becomes this thing of like, we are just Ken. And it's triumphant. So it has this arc, a story
crescendo
arc. Where it's like, listening to it the first through, you know, probably 12 times I've heard it, because I have it on my, on Spotify, I just am like, oh, it's like a song about just being like mediocre, but there's a turn in it where he is really proud of being Ken, and then this whole group of people are singing, and so am I. And then at the Oscars, to have Emma Stone say, and so am I, was just like, that we're all Ken, you know? And that, and being Ken isn't so bad, and that you are maybe not as talented or shiny or as perfect looking or as like get as much attention as Barbie, and you never will. You live in a world where
I don't know.
Well, no.
I prefer Bono walking around holding a balloon going, where are my keys? Are my children safe?
Don't get me started.
Is this
again?
My house?
Steve where? Jobs.
That's a better performance, I think.
It was just, and he's so, he just does this thing where, you know, you want him to commit to the character hard, which he absolutely does, but he's also not trying too hard. There's like these, the way he walks, he's just like smooth. The way he like, he kind of mails in some of the dance moves that looks like he's not trying, but it's like, that's a part of his character, is this guy who's like doing the dance moves, but doesn't really care. So like, there's just, he's just so cool.
Oh.
Ryan Gosling's just Ryan so Gosling's fucking cool.
Yeah.
And people are like, impressed by how good of a dancer and singer he is. Dude, this guy was in the Mickey Mouse Club. That's that's MK
that's
Ultra. That's MK Ultra for
God, I haven't heard that in a long
for
time.
For talent. MK Ultra is why
what is that?
That's well, you heard about MK Ultra in the Kennedy assassination Reiner podcast.
Back. Okay.
And that is what the CIA used to mind control people.
Oh.
And that's, he went through, it's he
way,
was MK Ultra
was
in
way
Atlanta, I think.
To develop super soldiers to combat the Russians in the Cold War. And they were, you know, the Bourne series?
Yep.
The Bourne, that's an MK Ultra movie.
Okay.
Oh,
Bourne is MK Ultra guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Mickey Mouse Club is MK Ultraing for just talent. Like, if you want someone to kill the president, MK Ultra them to assassinate. If you want... If you want someone to perform well the rest of their lives flawlessly, Mickey Mouse Club, get them in there. They will.
Good advice.
I mean, that's really, I mean, that book, The Talent Code, that we read, Brian, like,
always I love The Talent
what
Code.
I remember from that. You were the one that recommended that to me, I think, like 7 years ago at this point.
It was a long time ago.
It was, 7 years. Eight. We're in 2024, baby. That was 2016.
In the amount of time that I recommended that, you could have developed a talent.
Honestly, that is not... I did. And like playing guitar, like I definitely researched, or I like referenced The Talent Code in it. It's like, you're only going to get... Or singing and playing guitar, you're only going to get what you put into it. And the only reason anyone's ever better at you than anything is a little bit of born talent.
Okay.
Like is an aptitude for something. But it's mostly
born ultimatum.
Yeah,
that 10,000.
It's mostly the hard work and the repetition and being comfortable with sucking and being okay with sucking and making those little improvements and staying in a zone where you're always working on something that's a little challenging, not too challenging. Yes. Don't try to play, you know, something expert level when you're a beginner, because you'll get discouraged and you'll
discouraged.
Quit. Right. But it should be something that you could do, but it's a little out of reach.
Right.
And that will always keep you.
That'll keep you interested.
Yeah. But when you, the thing that I'll always remember from that book is Beyonce did not come out Beyonce. Beyonce didn't have a childhood. That's why she's Beyonce. We didn't see the hard work. We didn't see all the hours she put in before she came on the scene when she was, what, 16, 17? But that was 16 years. Let's take away 4 years, because she probably started when she was four. That's 12 years of intense Jackson 5-esque boot camp working.
Really? And you know that for sure?
She worked her ass off. She was in like dance. She went to like dance schools instead of school. And singing.
Of the examples they gave in the book was Jessica Simpson also. She was trained from like 4 years old to become a good singer. And so when she was 12, she was an amazing singer because she had been singing already for 8 years.
Yeah.
Same thing with Beethoven. Like anybody who is like a phenom, a quote unquote prodigy,
they started
something
at
like
four.
That. They just, the parents just took a whip and like started, and maybe they wanted to do it too.
Yeah.
But what kind of 4 year old
they don't
like,
knows that
wants to put in that work without the parents.
Well, they do if it means
them.
That it's going to get their parents to love them. And so that's why I'm an Enneagram 3, and that is that's what we're achievers. Now, I'm like a low end achieving 3. Like optimal 3s are like Beyonce's.
Okay.
And Taylor Swift's.
Wait, they go up to what?
No, it's like it's 9 different numbers.
Oh.
But if you're an Enneagram 3, you're the achiever, and you in your core, you feel like you don't have value unless you are a success. And usually that success is determined by what your parents are into. So if you and dad were
guitar players.
Yeah, exactly.
Just say that.
No, but dad is, so that's not a good example. But if you were florists and your big thing was like, Matt, wow, like, what's it called when they do like landscaping is our family's business was landscaping, and you were so amazed by like yard architecture.
Okay.
I would have probably gotten into that field as a 3.
Okay. You want to please your parents.
Yeah.
It only applies to yard architecture though, to be clear.
You know, like whatever your parents are into, whatever your peer group and the people who you're trying to earn their love are into. And that's not to say because you said, I'm not going to love you unless you do this. That's just the disposition I was born with as
a
3.
Maybe she did.
And possibly I got that signaling, but no intent of theirs. But because I've made this connection before, because Howard Stern talks about how he didn't feel like his dad loved him. So he was like, oh, but my dad loves the guys on the radio. So I'll just become the best at that.
Oh,
and he'll have to love me because that's what he
loves.
Did
his dad wind up loving him?
No, his dad's I can't speak for Howard, but I would say his dad still doesn't acknowledge how fucking great he is, even though
his father's dead.
No, his father's still alive. Oh, I think he just died.
Yeah, his father's dead. The mother's still alive.
Yes, but his father just died. His dad was around for a while, and I don't think he ever got the validation he wanted. I've got that, and I don't need it anymore. I could stop doing this. Because
we accept
arrived.
You now.
Yeah, you guys are.
You.
Well, but it does make sense because I look back at my life and I'm as a 3. I'm like, and by the way, Enneagram is the fucking shit. Taylor's been trying to get me into it forever. I'm so on board now, and she's like, yeah, of course. Like she was like, I've been talking about this stuff. She bought me a book for my birthday. I've just cracked it open. It's so interesting because it nails you. Dude, Brian's the challenger. He exploded in the
80s. Yeah, but I wasn't nailed when all those, there was things that I was like, that's not
no,
me. I was kind of joking, but.
There's not all stuff that you, there's going to be some things that you're like, that doesn't resonate. But
wow, I'm afraid
of
this.
Don't be afraid because it really opens up yourself to like, it makes you feel, I like it because it makes me feel less uniquely weird. Mm. So the things that make me weird,
right.
I'm like, oh, they're written in this book. Like everyone who has this number, who is a 3, which is 16% of people or something like that, 13% of people, something in the 10% range, 10 to 13% have this.
Okay.
And it's not that weird. We all want love in this desperate way. And we all inherently don't really like ourselves that much. And we think that if enough people like us, that'll make us liked. and that it's not that bad of a trait and that it actually makes sense for you. It's not your fault that you're like this.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm totally into checking this out.
Yeah. But I mean, this weekend when Sonia from the Desperate Housewives DM'd me, I screenshotted it to serve to you as like, Mom, ooh, see, look, people you love, love me.
Wait, you didn't send that to me.
I know. I forgot to send it, but Sonia reached out.
Sonia.
Yeah. I don't. Why? She said she's on tour and she just wanted to reach out. I don't know what that means.
What does that mean?
Yeah. Sonia. She looks like me.
She looks like Barbara Streisand is who she looks like.
Who I think I look like sometimes.
Oh, maybe you do.
Just a prominent nose.
You look like so many people. There was someone at the meet and greet in Ben Salem who looked like you, and they were too nervous to say that that was the case. But then you said it. You said, you look like me.
I say it every time.
Then,
oh, when someone looks like you?
And then
like
the husband was like, yes, of course. See, I've been saying this constantly. She's like, I know I look like you. I didn't want to say it. He's like, I've been saying.
Because people... would
they're afraid to say it.
Yeah, but I know they think it. And you don't want to go up to a girl like, I think I look like you. Especially if you think she's like super pretty and you're like, I don't want to offend
very
her
forward.
If I am not as pretty as her. So I'll just give it to them because I know that I see it too.
Yeah.
And so I have literally not said it once where they haven't gone, I told you, John. Like, and they've had the couples had a moment. Not once. They always have thought
it must
it before.
Be very obvious.
And by the way, girls really like girls who look like them. Like the other night, Anya was freaking out about Jodie Foster, Sandra Hüller from the Anatomy of a Fall. She's with her.
What about her?
And I go, why? She looks nothing like you. Because Anya's usually obsessed with women who look like her. Like you will always notice. Every girl. Yeah, Meg Ryan. Every girl likes people that look like them. Everyone. I mean, it's part of my Taylor Swift. If Taylor Swift had black hair or a raven hair, I probably wouldn't.
You wouldn't relate to her
as much. I would guess. I can't imagine that. I hope that's not true, but I think it's part of it.
Yeah.
And so when I see girls that look like me, I'm like, it's part of why you like me, because I kind of look like you. And you like yourself. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
You like people that look like you.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with this.
No, I love it. Yeah. Do you think you look like?
I don't think I look like anybody.
Jodie Foster is who you look like.
Jodie
Foster.
Is that
why
you just mentioned her?
No, but Anya does love her too. And I was like, you don't look like her either. But you look so... The other night at the Academy Awards, I was like, there's my mom.
Are you kidding?
Identical.
I thought she looked really cute the other night.
She's so cute. Yeah, you look like her.
But I didn't think she looked cute in the movie that she was...
Well, I don't think she was trying to look cute.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
I can kind of see it.
The Oscars triggered Anya and I.
But
people just look too hot. And yesterday we both had a little bit of a dark day because also Matt sent us all the photos from the weekend that he took of us. And like there's just some hard truths learned about our aging heads.
Jeez.
It's just hard to see. I know that you're like, you're so young. What are you talking about? But like when you were my age, you were having the same problems. 100%. We watched home video the other night and you were like, ugh, look at me. I'm like, you are 32.
I have like 15 different hairstyles.
Yeah,
you're
trying some stuff out.
I know, weird.
Well, we have lots to talk about on the show today. There was a photo shoot last week. There was the Oscars. I want to talk more about that. We got triggered. We had shows over the weekend. Noah's wedding.
Thing.
We're going to go really in depth on. Yes.
Before Noah's wedding, I have a question about Enneagrams because there's 9 types of Enneagrams.
Yeah.
There's a thing that I followed called the 9 fears, which is also a way to break down like character types. And I want to know if it's the same thing, just in reverse.
Well, there is a thing on Enneagram that's like your number one fear as this Enneagram. So it's based around fears. Like that's a way to learn about yourself. So each Enneagram does have a base fear.
Okay.
Because this Enneagram, like you're driven by love.
Enneagram is a personality test.
You want to be loved, though. Each one of them is, I want to be
loved. I think
every
person wants to be loved.
But that's what the Enneagram is breaking it down by,
love.
By the degree of love?
No. I don't think so. I don't know enough. Taylor should be here to answer that, but I do not think that that's what it's breaking it down.
Oh, okay.
It's based on just your disposition, what you were born with, and also nurture. So what your childhood was like, and your probably birth order plays into that, just what you experienced as a childhood, your sensitivity just based on how you came out. So it's constantly in the margins of this book. It's like, this isn't your parents' fault. it's we're not saying this is all your parents' fault. They keep reminding, like, this is just kind of how you are as well. But it is your parents' stuff too. So it's like, it's both of those things. It's really scientific. It's not astrology. It's Enneagram is the shit. Everyone should take a test. Maybe we'll give the test to you, Mom, and then everyone at home can take the test with us because it's really short.
That would be great. I'd
do
it.
Back, okay. When we get back, we'll do an Enneagram test and get out your pens and paper because it you'll just remember two letters. So I think everyone can do that. We'll be right back.
Scared.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
Okay, we're back. Here comes the Enneagram test that I sent to my girls' chat last week because I wanted everyone to just redo theirs. So then I gave Brian this test this week. He was an 8. Let's see what everyone else gets. I'll give you the... So you just have to... Let me just say before this, select one paragraph in each of the following two groups. So I'm going to go through two groups of paragraphs. There are three paragraphs per group. And you got to figure out which of the paragraphs best reflects your general attitudes and behaviors as you have been most of your life. Okay? You do not have to agree completely with every word or statement in the paragraph you select. You may agree with only 80 to 90% of a particular paragraph. Okay? But you could still select that paragraph over the other two in the group. However, you should agree with the general tone and overall philosophy of the paragraph you select. You will probably disagree with some part of each of the paragraphs, okay?
Okay.
Do not reject a paragraph because of a single word or phrase.
Okay.
Again, look at the overall picture. Don't overanalyze your choices. Select the paragraph that you have a gut feeling about, okay?
Okay. All right.
So you get it. All right. So this is the first group of paragraphs, three paragraphs. Pick which one. A, I have tended to be fairly independent and assertive. I felt that life works best when you meet it head on. I set my own goals, get involved, and want to make things happen. I don't like sitting around. I want to achieve something big and have an impact. I don't necessarily seek confrontations, but I don't let people push me around either. Most of the time, I know what I want, and I go for it. I tend to work hard and to play hard. B, I have tended to be quiet and am used to being on my own. I usually don't draw much attention to myself socially, and it's generally unusual for me to assert myself all that forcefully. I don't feel comfortable taking the lead or being as competitive as others. Many would probably say that I'm something of a dreamer. A lot of my excitement goes on in my imagination. I can be quite content without feeling I have to be active all the time. Or C. I have tended to be extremely responsible and dedicated. I feel terrible if I don't keep my commitments and do what's expected of me. I want people to know that I'm there for them and that I'll do what is I believe is best for them. I've often made great personal sacrifices for the sake of others, whether they know it or not. I often don't take adequate care of myself. I do the work that needs to be done and relax, and I do what I really want if there's time left.
C.
We got a C on our hands. We got a live one. Noah?
Oh, I'm definitely the B.
Okay, Noah's a B. And Brian, you're A, right?
Yeah, I was A.
I was A as well. Okay. Group two.
Pennsylvania 8.
Okay, so this is either X, Y, or Z. X. I am a person who usually maintains a positive outlook and feels that things will work out for the best. I can usually find something to be enthusiastic about and different ways to occupy myself. I like being around people and helping others to be happy. I enjoy sharing my own well-being with them. I don't always feel great, but I try not to show it to anyone. However, staying positive has sometimes meant that I've put off dealing with my own problems for too long. Why? I am a person who has strong feelings about things. Most people can tell when I'm unhappy about something. I can be guarded with people, but I'm more sensitive than I let on. I want to know where I stand with others and who and what I can count on. It's pretty clear to most people where they stand with me. When I'm upset about something, I want others to respond and to get as worked up as I am. I know the rules, but I don't want people telling me what to do. I want to decide for myself. Z. I tend to be self-controlled and logical. I am uncomfortable dealing with feelings. I am efficient, even perfectionistic, and prefer working on my own. When there are problems or personal conflicts, I try not to bring my feelings into the situation. Some say I'm too cool and detached, but I don't want my emotional reactions to distract me from what's really important to me. I usually don't show my reactions when others get to me.
Z.
All right, so we've got a CZ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's CZ.
Oh, mom's a one.
Oh, the Whoa. Reformer.
The reformer. Rational, oh my God. Principled, self-controlled. Uh-huh. That's what Chris is.
Oh.
A reformer.
Oh, uh-oh.
You like things to be right and just.
Wow.
Is that true?
You're attracted sure. to reformers.
I'm attracted to my mom. And I worked out on a reformer today at Pilates.
Oh, yeah.
That's the
opera. That's what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh. I it was AZ, if you want to know if you're playing along. And Noah, you were
BX.
You are the peacemaker, receptive, reassuring, complacent. That's not nothing. The third one is really
I know
a dutiful
a pushover.
Wife, good at baking things.
Victim. No, the peacemaker is Obama's a peacemaker, so it's a good thing. There's good people in that one. And then Brian,
tell that
you
to the
were
people he droned.
AY, the challenger, self confident,
yeah,
decisive,
right.
Domineering.
They're right. Well, a shuttle
one of the
exploded.
Things that I liked about Brian's this weekend when we were reading it is that he, unexpected. That one of it was that sometimes they shout to get their point across, but it's not because they're angry. That's just they get worked up. And both Anya's husband, Matt, and Brian are challengers. And Anya was like, oh my God, that's so helpful to hear. Because when you learn what your partner's thing is, you can learn like, hey, eights sometimes will shout to get their point across, but they don't.
Yeah.
It's not because they're mad. And then you can
right.
then hear that and go, okay, maybe I'm not going to take offense. Like, I know I shout when I'm mad, but eights don't. So maybe when my husband
my God,
shouts.
I do that all the
you
time.
You shout so
and I do it
much.
On stage.
Yes, you
I
do.
I do it on stage, too.
Yes. Wow.
It's such
pretty
a thing.
True to form.
I can't stop myself from shouting.
Oh, man. Wait a minute. I want to know what a reformer does again.
Like you?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go through Enneagram 1. Let's go through some of the things.
So in my world, this is all about the fear, which is that she's afraid of being evil.
That could be
yes.
very true.
Well, you have a core desire. Your core desire is to be perfect.
Oh.
Mm.
You can struggle with, you struggle with your inner critic. You are very orderly.
Check.
your fear, your biggest fear is imperfection. Mm-hmm. You want to be cozy. I don't know. You are organized.
Cozy, like under a cover.
And you can be control. Yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, she makes
that's
homes so cozy.
Totally.
What's that like
I'm
Norwegian
totally.
Coziness thing called?
Oh, yeah. There's like a word for Norwegians. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot it.
You can
You'd
be controlling
that.
To maintain perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. At your best, you're ethical, reliable, productive, wise, idealistic, conscientious, honest, orderly, and self-disciplined. At your worst, you're a cunt. No. You're judgmental, inflexible, dogmatic, critical of others, uptight, controlling, anxious, jealous, fixated on imperfections. Does that all... Do you
Some
feel like it.
It
resonates?
Yeah. It could be kind of close.
Yuga.
It starts to hurt your feelings a little bit.
Yeah, but I see some of that. Yeah, for sure. That's
It's, but reading about it, like, I have the whole book. I can give you a whole chapter on yourself because it's, it shows you how to like relieve these types of things.
Oh.
How a healthy one can like, what you can do in your life to mitigate some of those things. Because at your best, ones have all of these things that other numbers don't have, okay, that you can bring to others and to the world, mm-hmm, that you might be getting in the way of sharing those. Like, you have special things as a, you have things as a one that make you like worse off, but you have things that you can bring to the table that no one else can, that, gotcha, are so important.
Gotcha.
And can you vacillate between like being good and being bad, or, yeah, are you just like stuck?
No, I think you can. I think it's like when you're in halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Mm. That's when you're going to go to these, mm-hmm, negative aspects of yourself. I just made that up. Halt is a, you know, 12-step kind of, uh-huh, thing. But that's whenever you're like acting out, or like never make a decision when you're in halt, hungry, angry, lonely, or tired.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Like always ask yourself, okay, halt, stop, halt, and say, what am I, any of these things right now? And then, mm-hmm, and then proceed.
Hungry, angry,
lonely, tired.
Tired.
Got it.
Yeah, it, that, that helps me, but not until after the fact. And I go, oh, it's, yeah, I was angry.
Halt.
Oh wait, yeah. I was Oops. All. I was at. I was hot. I was hat. I was hungry, angry, and tired.
So are there certain Enneagram types that get along better with other,
yes,
types?
Okay. Yeah.
And it's in like friends and relationships, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Like if you go on a YouTube dive, like it's for our listeners that took the quiz along with us, go like pull up what your number is. Oh, I should go through the, I'm so sorry, I didn't go through what everyone was. If you got AX, you're a 7, the enthusiast. If you got AY, you're 8, the challenger. If,
yeah,
you got AZ,
yeah,
you're the 3, you're achiever. Mm-hmm. If you got BX, you're the peacemaker. If you got BX, you're 9, the peacemaker. If you got BY, you're 4, the individualist. If you're BZ, you're a 5, the investigator. If you got CX, you're 2, the helper. If you got CY, you're 6, the loyalist. And if you got CZ, like my mom, you're number 1, the reformer. So what you go, just go to YouTube, type in Enneagram and then your number. And there's tons of experts. Some people that are like, you know, what's it called? Armchair therapist.
Armchair therapist.
Bullshit, yeah, artists.
But a lot of these people like have read enough. They might not have a degree, but they've done their research. I have to turn everyone on to my new favorite therapist on YouTube. Mm. I'm not kidding you. This girl has cracked me wide open, and it's,
wow,
not Enneagram.
Damn.
I'm, okay, obsessed with her. And I know I told you all about Hannah Uri.
Oh, that's the word
for
the
Norwegian girl that does
coziness.
Uri. Hannah Uri, U-I-R-I, is the woman who does the restorative yoga for people who've been through trauma. And I just listen to them. I don't even do them. And I should do them. But I listen to them and they soothe me. And they're amazing. Some besties wrote to me to ask for the name again. So I want to just give a shout out because she is truly, she's a lifesaver to me.
Wow.
Like, her videos are just.
Wait, what's her name?
Hannah Uri. I'll send some to you. You just put the phone next to your head or headphones in,
yeah,
and listen to her tell you what to do yoga style. But the thing is, you don't have to do any of it because the whole thing is, because it's for trauma sufferers. It's for people who've been like sexually assaulted. It, okay, really is. Like it's trauma based yoga. And so every time she tells you to do something, she goes, if you want, you don't have to do any of this. And I choose to not do any of it, but she's okay with that. Because it's like, it's only if you want.
Oh. Yeah.
Literally everything. You can, and now move, you're going to peel your spine up off the mat if that feels comfortable for you to do. And it's like so nice to hear a class where everything is like, if you don't do this, you fail.
Interesting.
Like everything is optional. Thus, you can opt out of the whole thing and she still likes you.
Wow.
It's really like the most comforting thing for someone who's a 3 or I think a 1 to listen to,
huh,
as someone who's an achiever and a perfectionist. It's just so nice. But here's the new girl I'm onto that I discovered this weekend. This bitch has my number and she knows everything about me. She is just speaking to my soul and,
wow,
making so much sense. And the way she talks, she repeats herself enough that and says it in different ways. And she talks so clearly, but it's off the dome. She's not like reading notes. She's not boring. She talks dynamically. She's incredible. I cannot wait to tell you about her. Her name is Heidi Priebe. P-R-I-E-B-E. Heidi Priebe. And she's just amazing. I have not, you know, I've listened to so many different talks
how
on YouTube.
How do you find someone like her?
Well,
how did
old
you find
Glazed
her?
Dog was going through it this week. Just okay. like, what's wrong with me? What's going on? Why can't I commit to things? What am I scared of? I got into the Enneagram. I'm like looking into myself. I want to like, you know, I want to just figure out what's going on here. What are these blocks? And I think I typed in, oh, you know what? I listened to a thing this weekend about shame. So there was this really boring guy, and I wanted to send you the video, Brian, because you were talking about the topic of shame, and I said, oh my God, I have a great video on that. And this guy, I was feeling shame. I just have always known that shame's a part of who I am. Like, if I get shamed, it's devastating. If someone, like, tries to make me feel bad about something I did, they might as well punch me in the face. Like, it's the worst thing you can do to me.
You hate the term shame on you.
Yeah, I do. Because it means, like, what you just did is your fault. That's why I love no free will. Nothing's my fault.
Right.
I didn't mean to do that. My brain just decided to do that. It's not me. It's my, you know, I love it not being at my, because at my core, I have toxic shame, which Heidi taught me that I have. But before that, I watched a video about shame by this guy. Let me find it, because I actually sent it to Anya last night, because she was having a dark night of the soul, as she called it. And I said, you should check out this guy's video. Well, now I can't find it, but I'll find it in a second. He had this video about overcoming shame by practicing self-compassion. And Dr. Chris Germer, G-E-R-M-E-R, Shame and Self-Compassion. It is a hour long. It's called Self-Compassion, an Antidote to Shame. That's the name of the video. If you struggle with shame, this really helped me. So he talks about how what shame is feeling embarrassed about something you did, right? Feeling like I'm a bad person because I did this. I chose the wrong thing. I'm making bad choices for myself. I'm embarrassed at the thing I did.
Okay.
But what that really is, if you really break it down, is that what you are just sad that what you think you did is going to get you less love. You're thinking when you've experienced shame, you're mourning the loss of potential love. People aren't going to love me as much because I chose to do this thing. I'm such a bad person. I fail at getting love. And when you really break it down, it's all about like you're just someone who wants love. The fact that you feel shame is just you being someone who desperately wants love. And if you start thinking about everyone in the world, besides psychopaths probably, all just desperately want love, and I would even argue that they do as well, you can feel more connected to other people. And if you, he asks you at the very end if you're willing to do it, to go into, he's like, okay, he talks for like 45 minutes about shame and what it is and unlocks it. And then he goes, okay, now I want you to imagine like a thing that you're like 30%, like it gets you about 30% anxious even thinking about how embarrassed you were and how shameful it is. Like for me, I was like, pictured my bedside table and like how many cans of Zevia there are. And there might be a vibrator. And there might be like one earphone that I didn't put back in its little case because I was too lazy. And then I pictured the piece of paper on the floor in my bedroom from my new mattress that has been on the floor for 2 weeks because I just don't have any reason to pick it up. It's a piece of paper that came with it that's like, here's your new Strava mattress. I hope you like it. And it's just, I keep stepping over it. It's literally on the way to my bed. I have to step over it and I just haven't picked it up. So I just pictured that.
Okay.
That's about 30% shame of like, if someone saw this and knew how long this has been here.
Yeah.
Which I'm now like talking about, which by the way, sharing about your shameful things is a huge antidote to shame.
Oh, okay.
AKA why I became a comedian.
Getting it off your chest, telling someone about it.
Yeah.
Admitting the thing you're ashamed about publicly, whether that's to a friend or like to your husband, to a therapist, is a way to get shame to lift.
Yeah.
So he like, so would you, but he makes you go into it. Yeah.
Shame and embarrassment. Like, are they the same then? Or are they different?
I don't think so.
No, I don't know. I think they kind of are. I think embarrassment is a type of shame.
To me, embarrassment is more surface level in the moment. And shame is like deeply rooted. This struck the core of your being and you don't even, it's like you can get embarrassed by like doing like, oh my God, I spilled a drink on my pants and now it looks like I pissed myself. Now I'm embarrassed, but you're not going to feel deep shame unless when you were growing up.
I think it's light shame.
And embarrassment is shame light.
Yeah, it's shame. It's okay. It's diet shame.
Yeah, diet shame.
But it's, I think it's a product of shame.
Yeah, like if you spill, because when I'm really feeling confident, I can fall over in a chair. I can trip. I can get food on my face. And someone goes, you have something on your face. And I don't care. Mm-hmm. But if I'm coming from a place of shame, those things are like, oh, my God. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, God, now I ruined my pants. And people think like, so it definitely is connected to how you're feeling. But lots of people, including myself, have a thing called toxic shame, which is what this Heidi girl opened me up about. And that's like, at your core, something happened to you early in your life, and it could have been an event of abuse. It could have been literally, like I've talked about on the show before, like you were a baby and someone was in a bad mood around you one day when you really needed them to not be. Mm. Like, you could have been like watching me one day and just like been in just a bad mood and not met my needs. And I'm like, gah, 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 and you're just kind of like not smiling at me. And that literally can build in a baby. Which, who could ever
believe that?
Could ever
imagine?
Not imagine it. Like, how could you avoid being in a bad mood around your baby? Of course, you're like. Eventually. But this is why being a parent is so scary.
Yeah.
Because you do risk, and it's not your fault, by the way, if you are a parent that does these things, because you're allowed to be in a bad mood around your baby. But I will say that things like that can lead to, if that happens a couple times and a baby's needs aren't being met, or its happiness is getting met with like, you're too happy and I'm in a bad mood and it's like not met, it can lead to that baby feeling like, so there's something wrong with me.
And I have to hide that.
If it's a sensitive baby.
Happiness, I have to hide
it. And then they have to hide it, especially if you have like I didn't have a depressed mom growing up, but people who do have depressed moms, some of who have been very close to me before. I've had many friends that grew up with moms that were depressed, and they have to, and I've been a depressed person. And when people are happy around me, I fucking hate it, dude. Mm. And I can only imagine if I had a little kid around me being like, look at this is a tree. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, I would just not, when I'm at my worst depressed wise, I would just be like, it's a leaf. Why are you excited? Like, I would, I know that it might, if I were 25 as a mom, I would have no way to hide that shit.
I haven't watched all of Heidi's thing, but I watched the one that you sent the girls.
Yeah, what'd you get out of it?
I thought it was very interesting, but I just wanted to touch on, you know, what you were just saying. That kind of puts the blame on one person. But what I got from the video where she was talking about
limerence and toxic shame.
The baby has to take responsibility.
Yes, that's what
to heal itself.
Yeah, I didn't get to that yet. I'm just saying where it can come from.
Yes, so that's what I really liked about it. I liked also what she was talking about, how when you're not really in touch with yourself or working on healing your emotional traumas and issues and all that stuff, your partner or, you know, whoever you're in a relationship with, the people you surround yourself by are going to mirror what is the internal struggle that you have. So I really like what she said about mirroring.
Yeah. Will you talk more on that? Because I felt like I got it, but I didn't get it. Like whatever you, So if I feel like inherently I am worthless unless I'm like, so that's what threes feel like their biggest fear is being worthless, is being a nobody. And that truly, like, being perfect is not my obsession. I know I'm not perfect.
Okay.
And I used to think I was a perfectionist, but that ain't it. I don't want to be a nobody. Mm-hmm. I want to be someone that people go, I remember her. Like, I just want to stand out and be extraordinary, not perfect.
You're a three, right?
But in my core, it's because
I don't feel like I expect things to be perfect either, or that I want
to
be
for yourself.
Perfect. Do you think that?
I think you're a little bit of that.
Really? Okay.
I screwed up this thing. No, it's not good. Like us eating a thing that you're making and you're like, no.
You're right. It's not good.
Yeah, but it's not bad that you're that way. That's just the way you are. It's just your personality. And it's like, and it also, like I said before, it makes you so great in so many ways. But you will, if you're not working on yourself, you choose people that will mirror back to you what you inherently think about yourself, which is... Yeah, I'm not that good.
Or it's just like what you put out there. I think what I liked about that is because I'm trying to do like the hypnotherapy thing now. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about like the mind-body connection. Mm. And I think that what she was saying kind of goes hand in hand in it, which is like when your mind has these negative thoughts about you, your mind has no way of implementing, right? So what it does is it makes your body implement. So it, like, the negative thoughts turn out fit, like, physical with your body. And whatever, you know, like, you think of yourself, I'm not enough, I'm worthless, I'm unloved, I'm always rejected, you're like making your body project that to the world, and then therefore it attracts people who will do that to you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. She talks a lot about, like, the way you physically look, and she's like, I want to be clear, I'm not fat shaming. I don't think you should look a certain way. I think you should not subscribe to, like, perfectionist stereotypes that you see on TikTok. But she goes, if you don't feed your body good foods and exercise your body and dress your body in things that make it look good and feel good, you're not respecting yourself. And if you're not respecting yourself, no one's going to respect you. So when you go out and when you are feeding your body trash, when you are drinking Diet Cokes, even though they like Diet Cokes,
no shame,
make me feel amazing. No shame. But, like, if I'm, you know, smoking weed to the point where my throat is burning.
Yeah.
Would I do that to a baby? Would I do that to something that I loved? You have to respect yourself, right, and feed yourself good foods and things that will, like, make you feel good. It's self-respect. And I used to always say, oh, wearing makeup is so sad, and, like, getting lip filler and all these things. Like, God, I'm such, why? I'm just trying to, like, get people to like me that way. But I have a new perception on it, which is I'm just trying to look the way I feel. I'm trying to, like, I feel pretty when I have lip filler or whatever it is. That's a bad example, because I don't feel pretty with lip filler, but with a lip flip, I do feel pretty. If you put a little Botox above my lip and it flips up, I feel prettier. And that's not vapid of me to get. That's me trying to put on the outside what I do feel on the inside.
Okay.
Like, I feel like I'm someone who deserves to look pretty. So I'm going to, and I think that that's not always the case. There's times where people try to fix outward things to heal something on the inside. But I do think that dressing a nice way, or, like, you know, women who always wear heels or they always wear makeup, I'm like, God, that's so sad. But maybe it's because they respect themselves and they want to look nice.
Well, that's the thing also, is, like, making sure that your mind is talking in positive. So it's like,
yeah, oh God, it's like a hardest thing. Yeah,
it's not easy, but, you know, you can say, I choose to take care of my skin, so I'm getting the lip flip. For me, it's self-care,
yes,
as opposed to, you know, something negative. Like,
no one judges you if you clean your car or your house, or you get your kitchen remodeled, you get new, you know, tires put on your car, but you get lip filler and people think you're like one of the saddest people that could ever live, or, you know what I mean? Like,
no one
judges me if I do Pilates 3 times a week. That's such a good thing. Well, it's transforming my body. What if I had a surgeon just do it quickly? How is it different?
Well, I once was judged for trying to upgrade my car because, I guess, in the man world, your car is like your body, an extension of your body, and it's view. I one time tried to put a expensive stereo system into a really shitty car because I worked at this deli and I had all this extra money and I didn't have anything to spend it on. I was in high school.
And that's what we used to do in the early 2000s.
Yes.
Put nice stereo systems in shitty cars.
Yeah. I had a 1990 one that would, like, click Volvo. On. It was, yeah, exactly. And it had that thing, the plate that could fold
the
down.
Plate.
You could put a CD in it.
Wait, oh, it would it would tilt down.
Yes,
like
it would
screen.
Tilt down. You could
Fuck,
put a CD
yes,
in
dude.
It. And then it
those
tilts back
those were the coolest.
Up, and it had the audio waveform thing popping, so it looked like your car was like a disco.
You had it was like a little screen that would show the waves of the audio.
Show the waves,
dude,
while
I mean,
I'm driving.
It's, there's nothing cooler.
How do you know about this,
because
Nikki?
I was in high school in the early 2000s, and this is what people were getting put in their cars.
Gotcha.
And it was, you know, Huffy had one. I got one put in the Bastard.
I remember you did get a new
stereo. We were all going to audio specialists and dropping our cars off and having them flip our cars. It was a thing I read about recently. Like, why did we all decide to do this?
Because
they came with
shitty
audio.
Yeah.
And suddenly the audio was making bigger advancements than the car companies could put in the cars. Okay, so Brian, you did this.
I had a 1990 Volvo 740 Turbo, which, remember those Volvos that were like a box? They were like boxy cars.
Yeah, and they had the backward seats in the back.
No, they were regular
car.
No,
he's talking about a sedan.
Yeah, it was a sedan, but it was like a square. You know how cars these days are smooth and like there's like a they're very smooth and like they're circular and there's no sharp angles. A Volvo from the 90s was like a couple of rectangles on top of each other.
Right. They totally were. They were like a child's drawing of a car.
Yes.
Right.
Like his hand's not formed enough to do smooth arcs yet.
Yes.
Or like an Etch-a-Sketch. And that car was like on its last legs. And I put this thing in at Circuit City, the now defunct Circuit City.
Yeah.
The people were like, you want us to put this in that? And I was like, yeah. Because it was like a $3,000 system. Putting it in a car.
I was going to say, was that $3,000? Yeah, it sounds like it.
$3,000. And I was putting it in a car that I could probably sell for $700. And they were like, you want us to put this in that? And I was like, yeah. And then I could see them in the back.
You
when he's
almost
like,
saved Circuit City.
I did, yeah. I was trying to single-handedly save it from bankruptcy. They were all laughing at me in the back behind when they were like, he wants to put it in there. And then the other guy would go, oh my God. And they'd start laughing. And then they'd see that I was looking at them through the screen. And then they'd go, oh, he's looking at us. And they'd go laugh in private.
And then you screamed at them, but you go, don't take offense. I'm an eight. I'm just
enthusiastic.
Right. I'm not
I just mad. Started saying, but this is what I want. I worked hard at the deli.
And that is totally the way you talk.
Yeah. I worked very hard
at
the deli.
Brian, a thing you do on stage that I love is like if the audience doesn't like a joke or like isn't on board, he'll be like, so you don't think that that's weird that happened? Like he'll check with them and go like, I just want to make sure you don't think that's comical that I just said that, and he'll repeat it. And then they have to like, they're like, well, actually you're right when
they
you say it
agree.
Like that.
Yeah.
But he will check with them. Good. I'm always like, okay, I guess that wasn't funny. But he's like, wait a second. So you don't think that is interesting that I pressed the emergency stop button on an escalator. You're all just okay with that?
Yes. Sometimes you say there's two things that happen. One is sometimes you say something that 95% of audiences thought was interesting, and for whatever reason this one audience decides it's not, they deserve to be yelled at.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know your feeling. Oh my gosh, I totally know that feeling. Okay, we'll be right back after this.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network.
Final thought. So Noah's wedding, I guess.
I don't know what's going on with Noah's wedding.
Well, she got married.
What?
Yes.
Noah's married.
When?
2 weeks ago?
About a month ago.
Oh, congratulations. I heard the wedding noise, but
didn't you listen to
the
episode where we went in depth into her wedding?
No,
we didn't. It's a joke. We keep forgetting to talk about it. So I wanted to talk about some things.
Let's talk about it.
First of all, leading up to the wedding, I've had three friends get married in the past year.
God.
And something that upsets so many brides, and I wish we would all stop doing it, is like people giving advice when it's not when they're not asking for it and getting in brides' minds. And this is for upcoming mothers as well.
Yeah.
Like, stay in your lane. I don't care how many kids you have. Their experience is going to be different. You're bringing so much to the table that they aren't, or vice versa. Like,
good advice.
Just share your positive things.
Yeah.
Stop projecting all your negative bullshit just because you don't like your husband and you had a bad time.
having a baby.
Phrase it from a positive place. Like, Noah, did you go through a lot of that?
Yeah, I think like if I took away anything, and I knew going into it that I was going to get a lot of like opinions or statements or questions. And I think like for anyone who's getting married, the thing that you need is a backbone. And that could mean anything. That could mean being aggressive in return or just like letting shit roll off your back and just being like, okay, fine, this is probably coming from a loving place, but I don't need to absorb any of this. But it's just very interesting that like all these things come out, all these like all of people's issues, and I wouldn't even say it was all opinions about what we chose to do or anything like that, but just a lot of comments and things that you hear that are definitely like deeply rooted issues that people have not addressed. And for some reason a big event like a wedding or some kind of like big celebration brings that shit out. And I thought it was like very interesting from like a psychological perspective.
Can we get an example?
Yeah, just that.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, without going too much, but maybe like some family infighting that has nothing to do with the people getting married and not like expecting a bride and groom to play chess.
Oh, yeah.
With certain people, when it could just be like adults handling it and staying away from each other,
make it about them.
I don't know.
That's the thing that bugs me is like, I see that happen all the time of like brides or brides, mostly brides, talking about how they have to deal with, well, these people can't be sat with these people, and we're worried that his mom is going to feel, I have to make sure that his sister's brought this thing. It's like, like, what happened to this being your day? You know, like, why do we have to manage all these other people's feelings right now?
I got a lot, and my sister-in-law helped me through a lot of stuff, like, that, or maybe people having certain, like, dietary restrictions.
Oh, give me
I'm not
going
to add, like, chicken fingers to my wedding menu because this and that. Like, she's like, you know,
for
people are adults, right? So people are adults. They
bring
your
kids snacks.
Bring things. They can bring their sweater. They can bring
adults.
Their food.
Yes,
they can handle it. They can keep themselves busy. You don't have to figure out what they're doing for dinner on a night that they're there. That there's nothing going on. Just like all these,
as
these
a vegan,
things, it's like,
bring a backup.
Yeah,
bring a pocket of protein bars. Because you might not have something to
eat. A lot of the time, even if you tell the catering company, like, make sure there's vegan options, a lot of the times they're just not good at the vegan options. And then even if there is a vegan option, it's not very good.
Amazing for me.
I had vegan.
It was, but that's an interesting thing that comes up is the just unsolicited advice and just people wanting to, like, get involved in
and when you're
just
pregnant,
want to bring up drama. Oh my
when you're
God,
pregnant and everyone tells you, oh, aren't you tired? You should be sitting down. And I'm just like, I've been on this planet for 40 years.
Stop
I know my
projecting.
Legs and my body better than you. I can tell when I need to sit down.
That's another thing. Let's just stop
so
doing
funny.
That in general. You must be so this. Like,
yeah.
Can we all just.
Yeah, assumptions.
Do you know why we do that? Yeah. Is because if you are someone that does that, it's because you don't speak up for yourself when your legs are tired.
Uh-huh.
That's you.
Oh, that's interesting.
Other people do. Assume other people do. Assume you don't like to have your needs met and you're scared to get them met. So that is nice of you to consider other people's, because I do that a lot too. I know that I do that because I'm always scared to speak up. So I'm constantly monitoring what other people might need to try to get ahead of it because I know they won't speak up, but they will. Because they're you should leave them to have to say something. Don't try to and yeah, that's so insulting when someone's like, you should sit down. Like,
well,
it's my wedding.
It didn't even come from family or anything. Like, a quick story is one of the hotel staff people, the cleaning lady, I passed her in the hallway and she's like, oh, how many weeks are you? This and that. So I told her and she's like, my daughter just had a baby. Okay, great. Awesome. Then the next day I'm downstairs in the lobby waiting and she passes by me and she looks at me And she goes, how many weeks are you? And I'm like, oh, I'm 30.
We've been through this.
I'm 27 weeks. Yeah. And she's like, 27 weeks. You should be sitting down, not standing. And I'm like, wow. That's okay. I'm fine.
Oh, so see, that's like making you feel bad about, like, what are you doing to that baby?
Oh,
I'm
like,
standing is good. It's good. It's I'm building muscle. It's good.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's like almost 7 months.
Yeah, almost.
Oh, wow. So this baby's coming.
She's just acting like she's being nice to you and like thinking about your.
I didn't think too much of it, to be honest. And I have to say that, like, for the most part, I had a wonderful time, even though my wedding got rained out.
Did Avi cry?
Avi, so on our first dance or whatever, it was after everyone gave speeches and he started to cry and he was so cute.
Aww. Like during the speech?
Not during the speech. It was just like, I think like it all kind of like hit him. Aww. And then
moment.
Does he cry a lot, like emotionally?
Yeah. I mean, he's cried. He's cried. I mean, like he cries at
You've
like.
You've seen it.
I've seen it. But.
Did you tell him to sit down? He should sit down.
Yeah. Did you tell him how?
No, I was just like, I was like, shameful. Let's do another dance move. Cause we were just like waiting, like back and forth.
It's
and I was
so
like,
awkward to dance in front of everyone.
Was
honestly,
it?
Honestly.
Awkward.
You know how I am with being center of attention. I don't like it.
Yes. Oh yeah. Tell me.
I didn't care. I was like, you know what? F this.
Mm. Yeah. They can watch if they want. They don't have to if they don't want to.
Also, my contact got stained from like my hairspray or makeup or something. So I was only like with one contact the whole time. Only
damn,
vision. So I was just like, I don't give a shit. I only get this once. I'm gonna enjoy it.
Aww.
And I liked our first dance, and then we had a typo negative song that was really fun to dance to, called "I Don't Want to Be Me," and we just like thrashed around with our friends and our
like a heavy metal song.
I got it.
Some family was like, "What's going on? Oh no, a pregnant woman in a mosh pit!" But it was not like that. It was just fun, and I really understood what the wedded bliss feeling was like. I really felt it. It was really nice.
That's cool.
Are you still? Do you still have it? What does life feel different now being married? Is there a change?
Well, you know, like we did everything backwards. So
yeah, like I guess being pregnant with his child and living in a house together. Like,
you guys got divorced first.
Yes,
we
kind of did, and but it feels nice. I definitely feel.
Have you said husband yet?
Yes, and that feels good. I like it because I feel like a sense of security, and you know, like the seal of commitment that we both made to each other.
And the baby didn't give that to you, like the fact that you're gonna have a baby together.
You know what?
Brian.
It was not the baby that sealed the deal. It was the wedding.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
That's so fun.
Oh,
I saw the picture. She looked so beautiful.
See.
And her dress was so good. But then she asked Sarah Lena for advice on the dress. Like, how do I make this better? And Sarah Lena told her to put a slit in it. And God.
She didn't say just put a slit. She was like, put a slit and put it all the way up to here. And she pointed to like
where the
femur meets the pelvis.
It was such a good call. It was so hot.
Really?
Yes. But she's also pregnant, so she can't look
otherwise I would have looked like a balloon.
She can't look indecent. When you're pregnant, you never look pornographic, right?
Right.
So, like, you could do the sexiest thing, and you still look, like,
and you
wholesome.
You felt comfortable with the
slit. It was
slit.
So hot.
Yes, and my boobs grew 3 cups. So I was like, you know what? Let's pump these babies up.
Well, Chris and I went to a pregnant wedding in Australia. She was 7.5 months, maybe 8 months pregnant. And I was like, that's the hottest bride I've ever seen in my fucking life.
Wow.
Like, there is something about a pregnant woman that is so hot.
Yeah.
And I went up to her afterwards and I go, listen, I know everyone's telling you you look hot tonight. And I was like, and that's just what they would say no matter what. But we all mean it. This is next level. I was like, I want to get pregnant because this looks, you make it look like a hot accessory.
First time you've said anything.
No, because I just want to look hot.
Yeah.
But I really was like, you make me want to be pregnant because it makes you look so beautiful.
Well, I cannot wait to see your picture.
Yeah, I'll share them with you. God. They're really cute. And then they did this, like, what's the Jewish ritual where you like, he walks around you a bunch?
That's the nervous energy tradition. Yes. Yeah.
So in the Jewish tradition,
or do
tradition,
you walk around him?
I have to walk around him 7 times. I don't give him a ring during the ceremony.
I thought they were going to stop playing the music and it was going to be like musical chairs and you're going to have to like both violently sit somewhere because you're just like dun, 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 dun. But you walk around to symbolize the ring?
So yeah, like so that's like my ring to him. That's me symbolizing to him that, you know, I'm accepting him and all that stuff.
Did you do the? So if he just gets you to walk around him, he doesn't have to wear anything to Well, actually, yeah, he has a ring
too,
right?
So basically after the ceremony in Jewish tradition, you go down to a private space for 12 minutes and you're supposed to have sex for the first time.
Oh my God. I've never heard
this.
That's
right.
And that's where Shalom you give him a present. It's called the Yichud room. Mm-hmm. And you go there and you give him a ring.
Uh-huh.
Or like a gift or anything like, you know, he presents you with a gift or anything like that. And you have sex sealed
for the first time for 12 minutes.
At least 12 minutes.
Mm.
And then you come back and everyone knows you've just banged.
Yes.
And then I go, that was only 6 minutes. What's going on, Avi?
Well, no, the rabbi stays outside the room and makes sure you don't come out before 12 minutes.
Wow.
Oh my God.
The Jews.
Wait, did you actually
stamina?
Go to a room?
We didn't. I mean, we've already had sex because I was pregnant, right. So it wasn't like that. But that's where we signed our marriage license, and our friends came down,
and then you
that's
all
where
had
I gave
sex.
Avi his ring. We had an orgy with the rabbi. It was wonderful.
What about the chair part and the stomping on the glass?
So you stomped on the glass, but the chair stuff where they like lift you in the party and like shake you up and down.
They just do it to the guy, right?
No.
Both.
They lift you both?
Yeah. Oh. Well, I only got raised halfway because, you know, in case. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow.
Well, in Australia, after you get married and you say, I do, they step to the side, they sit down at a table, and then they call up witnesses, and then they sign the legal papers there, and it takes like 10 minutes.
Wow.
And everyone just kind of stands there and waits. And Chris, I guess I just would go, what's going on right now? And everyone's like, the signing. And I'm like,
oh,
I don't even know what they called it. But I go, what is this? And they're like, you guys don't do this? And we're like, no.
Well, interesting.
We just want a party. We want some attention. Yeah. We don't really want the documents.
Get that party started.
A lot of
started.
Us don't even sign the documents afterwards. I have friends who have gotten divorced and they go to get a divorce and they realize they never even went and filed the paperwork. So they're not even married. I have a friend that happened
to. No kidding. Wow.
Because it's just... You could just say that you are. No one's going to question it. But, they, no. but in Australia, they make you sign the papers right there.
They want proof. Where's the proof?
They want proof.
Yep.
At my wedding, I opted not to do the chair thing for the most Jewish reason possible, which is I thought I'd get nauseous.
I thought I'd get
nauseous. And so it's like, what's more Jewish than
or
that?
What?
It should be the tradition that you decline the chair thing because you're going to get nauseous. That should be the Jewish tradition. Not for me. I don't want to put myself in that position. You know?
And then they go, okay, we're going to stomp the glasses. Like, but it's going to make a mess. Is that a Jewish thing?
Someone's going to get their
foot cut.
That's more Jewish. It's to be like, but what if I cut my foot?
Yeah, that's
something the rabbi warned us about.
Now be careful, you flimsy might cut glass. Your foot.
Oh.
Yeah.
Pick out thin glass.
It reminds me of the other night when Dad caught a stink bug in the TV room.
Yeah.
And he's like, I hate these damn things. And I'm just like, God, just let it out. And he goes, no, you got to kill it. And so he goes out in his socks and he puts the stink bug in a paper towel. And then he stomps on the paper towel.
Oh, my God.
And he really stomps it. It's like this very dramatic thing. And I go, what, did that feel good? Really? Oh, you let him have it. And he goes, no, you got to kill him. I was trying to make sure he was dead. I was like, that was a little much. Mm. And then he came back in and he goes, God, you could smell that damn stink bug. God,
it was all over his sock.
He expressed before I killed him. And then he goes, oh, he smelled his foot. And it's soaked in. Who stomps on a bug in their sock?
That hard. And
yes, and a stink bug.
Deliberate.
That you know it oozes out the worst smell.
Yeah, well.
Dad hates stink bugs.
No, no one likes them.
I like them.
I mean,
they're kind of, they are harmless.
He built a trap for them.
He's obsessed.
He built a special trap out of liter bottles.
Nikki Glaser Pod memes, will you please do a meme about my dad and stink bugs and how he is out to get them.
He wants them to suffer. Actually, he hates them that much.
Yeah.
I'm like, I hate this thing because they fall into this trap and they die.
Dad's a type too. And their biggest fear.
What is
fear,
that? We're going to do a test.
Stink bugs.
I'm going to do a test on him.
No. Oh, yeah. We should.
Yeah. We got to
I'll send
find
you
out.
That. You got to give it. You got to tell out. Me which one he is. Yeah. I'm going to guess, and I bet I'll know.
But, okay. All right. Yeah. Well,
I don't know
tell
what that guess
yet.
Is yet. Okay. Yeah. We got to go. Thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. We will be here tomorrow. Don't even think you, we won't. This weekend, I'm going to be in Grand Rapids and Columbus. So excited about those shows. We are back on tour. It is so fun. Besties have been coming out to shows. It's like the best time meeting you guys afterwards. As always, you can go to the merch booth after the show. Tell Anya that you're a bestie. She'll give you a free meet and greet. You know how it works. So buy tickets to those shows, Grand Rapids and Columbus, this weekend. Yes, this weekend. And then the following weekend, we're somewhere else. Brian, where are we?
Cincinnati.
Gary, Cincinnati. Indiana. Yeah. And then Cincinnati.
Gary, Indiana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Birthplace of Michael Jackson.
Hometown.
And then Cincinnati, birthplace of moi.
We're going to have a bunch of people coming.
Bunch of people. Besties, you got to fill that up too, because I don't want to all be my family. All right. Love you guys so much. Thank you for listening. Don't be good. Bye.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at conairgirlbomb.com or a retailer near you.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.